Sunday, 17th August, 1986.
We talk of my karma, your karma, his karma or her karma, our karma or their karma, etc., because we are conscious of everything in this fragmentary manner. Since we are still not fully developed humans, we are confined to isolative and separative consciousness with respect to everything. Hence, our entire life process is a fragmentary one, as an unholy one. Karma is the action process of the whole universe. It is composed of the countless action processes of the countless particulars which make up the content of the universe. Not being holistically conscious, we see and regard these countless processes as unrelated to each other, usually. We fail to see their complete interactivity and interrelationship, and thus we fail to be conscious of the wholeness, the unitariness of the universe, although we have defined universe as turned into a unity, unus one vertere to turn. So universe literally means turned into a unity. We fail also to see that each particular is a holographic manifestation of the totality. Seeing all particulars as unrelated, non-complementary differentiations, inevitably there is duality, multiplicity and dukkha, confusion and chaos. But it is out of our chaos that order emerges, if we live as true humans. Since we fail to see all this, we are not capable of the action, the karma, which heals skillfully and does not bind. Our total life experience of the dualities of pleasure, pain, good, evil, growth, decay, fulfillment, failure, is the outward manifestation, the expression, that which is pushed out, express, the expression of our invisible, innermost mode of awareness, our consciousness. In turn, the outward manifestation, good or bad, healthy and holy, or ill and unholy, affects our mode of awareness. There is constant interaction between outward expression and innermost consciousness. There is also constant interaction between all the particulars composing the universe and between the universe as a whole and each and all the particulars composing it. It is this outward manifestation, physical and psychical, which we have to watch, understand, control, and allow and help to be transformed. I mentioned yesterday that each one of us is his or her brother or sister's keeper, and in fact the keeper of the totality. How shall I fulfill my duty as my brother's keeper? Never by intruding upon or interfering with him. This is a very important point. Everywhere in the world that is going on, this intrusion upon another's sphere of living. Not by intruding or interfering with him, but by minding my own business. That does not mean being insensitive or unawake or indifferent or unresponsive to him, or being selfishly self-absorbed. Consider, for instance, the sun and the earth. The sun's surface temperature is about 6,000 degrees. Deep in the center, it is about 40 million degrees. Suns and planets are generated by what is called the gravitational collapse of a cloud of interstellar gas consisting of hydrogen mostly, helium and dust. The collision of the gas molecules in the interior of the cloud heats it. At a certain point, the hydrogen begins to fuse into helium. Four hydrogen nuclei combining to form one helium nucleus. At the same time, a gamma ray photon is released. The photons are released as visible light after alternate absorptions and emissions by surrounding matter in the sun. Thermonuclear reactions like those in a hydrogen bomb power the sun in a contained and continuous explosion, converting some 400 million tons of hydrogen into helium every second. It's so difficult to imagine. 400 million tons of the lightest substance in the universe is converted every second into helium. To us, this explosive process seems just chaos, absolute disorder. But this is how the earth and all of us receive light and heat indispensable for life and growth, all in an orderly manner. What seems chaos, terrible and overwhelming, ends in beautiful order, a marvelously functioning cosmos. Now, the sun does not calculate, I shall pour out my light and heat to promote the well-being and fulfillment of those good members of the Buddhist summer school. But I shall sizzle up that awful heretic Firoz Mehta for all that he is doing to disturb the fixed interpretations and beliefs of the age-old teachings. No, the sun does not calculate. Naturally, spontaneously, it burns itself out explosively, giving light and heat, promoting life and fulfillment for all, for man and beast and plant. And its gravitative pull holds Mother Earth in a ceaseless and exquisite love dance through the ages. Now consider ourselves. The material body, the identifiable entity which bears our own name, is a differentiated manifestation projected on the screen of matter by the primordial, undifferentiated, creative energy. It consists, averagely, of 10 to the power 28 atoms. What a storehouse of explosive power! But Mother Nature, with extraordinary skill and with loving wisdom, has evolved it into a marvelous little cosmos, a thing of order with all its parts, all its organs, and all their functions working cooperatively in harmony. It is a healthy body. This body is not merely a mechanical machine. It is a living psychophysical organism to which we refer when we say I and you with reference to any other similar organism of the human species. Each and every member of the human species is an apparatus for transcendence to reveal its own transcendence in human terms, ranging from a veritable fiend to a perfected holy one, a Samma Sambuddha. So, each and every one of us is unique. The procreative process by means of which we come into being unfailingly makes each one of us different from our parents, different from anyone that ever was, is now, or will be. More of that later. Since transcendence is infinite, the variety of all its manifestations is inexhaustible. Let us now revert to the question posed earlier. How shall I fulfill my duty as my brother's keeper? And to the answer given, never by intruding upon or interfering with him, but by minding my own business. What is my own business? Having once seen for myself, or at least glimpsed, even faintly, the actual direction in which life is moving me and all my fellow human beings, it behoves me to understand that direction and to cooperate with that movement sensibly, intelligently, gently, and happily. I must never try to storm the ramparts of heaven, for heaven dislikes ugly action. Unskilled action only calls down Indra's thunderbolt on my head, and that's the end of me. What is the direction in which life is moving me, and how shall I discover it? First, I must see that the body, the living psychophysical organism, which is a unique manifestation of the primordial creative energy of transcendence, provides the way to human fruition. It is also my best teacher. Wisdom lies in studying it carefully, both structurally and functionally. I should observe it constantly and dispassionately, for it will teach me exactly what I am. It is myself in the proper meaning of the English word self. It is a continuously changing, that is, a transforming thing. It perishes when its final transformation in time takes place. This self, the I, first person singular, dies completely. There is no return for it. during its lifespan of manifestation, it affects the manifested totality out of which emerge other selves. I, the finite and temporal self, have contributed in my lifetime to the kind of selves that totality will express out of itself. Meditate profoundly on this in silence and understand the holistic fact underlying the inadequate and misleading concepts and verbal formulations of the popular beliefs named rebirth and reincarnation. I have no quarrel with the fact underlying it. It's the popular belief, the form of the popular belief, which is misleading, it is inadequate. And the less used Greek terms, transmigration, metempsychosis, metensomatosis, and palingenesis. The philosopher Schopenhauer talked of palingenesis, and to a considerable extent he was very good. Discover the body by observing it intently, here and now. Look within and see the actual state of the psyche, its interdependence and interaction with the material, physical part of the psychophysical organism. Look as silently as possible, free of the turmoil of the constantly chattering brain. Don't fight against the chatter, which will inevitably be there at first. Look at it quietly, with friendly indifference, and it will become tranquil. Look with love. Love not aflame with any desire whatsoever, but love at peace. Then that which you are observing will reveal its truth to you. Look intelligently, that is, selflessly. That selflessness makes the world, the not-self, disappear as an other in relation to you. That is, you will see the not-self as your own self. And then, transcendence embodied in you will see transcendence as it is in its own being, namely, the void, which is also the plenitude. Through your eyes, wherever you look, you will then see that the body, the nama rupa, the manifestation, is anatta and is also the atta. You know the word atta is used also for the body, to represent the body. Your samsara is also nirvana. Then you will be blissful when you study the Buddha's discourse on jhana and sati, which he concludes with this affirmation: because the deathless has been realized by those who have realized mindfulness centered on the body. Now that's a tremendous statement to make, of great consequence. It comes in the Anguttara, volume 1, 45. Realizing this, you will see something rich and strange. You will see and know for certain that you, a speck of man dust, are the eyes and ears and brain through which transcendence sees and hears and knows the wonder and beauty of its own signs. Each human being is like a living thought in the mind of transcendence, a flash of immortal light. Transcendence meditating is creative karma in eternity. On this planet, Earth, this creative karma is the birth of man. That is why man is fundamentally a religious being. As you observe the body, intellect and feeling, the masculine and feminine aspects of mind become conjoined. This conjugation is your first realization of the marriage made in heaven, of love at peace. It gives birth to a spiritual knowledge, the knowledge of your own uniqueness. This knowledge is quite different from the overweening conceit of self-approbation. It brings into clear consciousness what was the fact from the very moment of your conception in your mother's womb. I mentioned earlier that looking at ourselves from the spiritual standpoint as the apparatus for transcendence, each one of us is unique. This can be confirmed from the material, physical standpoint by considering what happens in the procreative process. Each parent produces a gamete, a mature reproductive cell. Whether male or female, its development differs from that of a non-reproductive cell. And they, of course, number the hundreds of millions. For this reproductive cell involves the rearrangement of the genetic material inherited by each parent from their parents. This rearrangement of the genetic material is the very important point. The union of the male and female gametes produces a zygote. The stages which the zygote undergoes are zygote, embryo, fetus, baby. The union, produces a zygote which becomes the new individual, different from the parents, different from any person that ever was, is now, or ever will be. He or she is a new creature with new possibilities of mental and spiritual development dependent on his or her environment and physical development. This is not a transference or carrying over of karma or character from a pre-existent person because of the rearrangement of the gametes, of the genetic material, and is incompatible with any theory of reincarnation. As I explained in my talk yesterday, it is totality which sows and it is totality which reaps. The sowing and reaping takes place in different fields, namely, the 5 billions of people in the world who are different, uniquely constituted fields for the sowing and reaping by transcendence, the infinite eternal. Whereas the earthly fields of a farmer do not move about or exhibit purposeful choice and activity, we, the human fields, do move about and do exercise purposeful choice and activity. But all this involves a transformation of our consciousness, of our mode of awareness of ourselves, of our world and of our relationship to the world. In what manner are most of us humans conscious? Are we not conscious of every object and person outside our body as something or someone separate from us? And whereas we are vividly conscious of our own organism and all its faculties and functions as our very self, are we not conscious of the rest of the universe as the not-self? We are separatively self-conscious with respect to things, isolatively self-conscious with respect to persons and living creatures. There are a few exceptions to this. If you are wholly united with your husband or with your wife, are you dualistically conscious with respect to him or her as my husband and I, or as my wife and I? Or are you non-dualistically and hence holistically, non-isolatively conscious of your mate and yourself as us, a unitary whole? And if you and your mate have been blessed by good fortune to know one of the secrets of marital congress regarding the right and beautiful mental and physical state in which to celebrate marital congress, a pure and exalted meditative state of sacramental union, and a child is born of that union, how else would you be conscious in relation to that child but in terms of us, a unitary whole? Such is the triumph of organic love, and in the light of that consciousness, in which a reflection of transcendental love is realized, you will experience a touch of real selflessness in depth, and you will know that the human individual, as a true unit, consists of you and your mate and your child, and not exclusively of you or your mate or your child. If we can realize this purity and perfection in the organic sphere and understand its significance, we can appreciate its supreme culmination in the transcendental sphere when the Buddha declared, "Because I am a Brahman, you are my own true sons, born of my mouth, born of Dhamma, created by Dhamma, my spiritual heirs, not carnal heirs." Look at page 188 in the Iti Uttaka, chapter 4, verse 1. He says that outright. And as a matter of fact, what he says there, you will find the similar statement, not exactly in those words, but a similar statement in the Rig Veda, book 10, hymn 90, verse 12, I think. You will find the same sort of statement there. The teacher, he who can help you to realize the unconditioned, the deathless, and you, the son, son of the teacher, are in a relationship of transcendental love. Your consciousness is an us consciousness. In perfection, the us consciousness is an all-inclusive consciousness, excluding nothing whatsoever in the universe, not even satanic evil, for it knows that its transcendent love and wisdom, patience and forbearance can heal and redeem all evil and restore it into its everlasting embrace. Such all-inclusive us consciousness is holistic consciousness towards which life is moving us in its ineluctable evolutionary movement. Seeing this, we can answer the question, what is my own business? Obviously, my own business is to live that kind of life which will allow and help my isolative and separative self-consciousness to evolve into the all-inclusive holistic consciousness, which is the culminating point of human development and fulfillment. Realizing this, we can see our way to answering our first question, how shall I fulfill my duty as my brother's keeper? Living religiously, and man is fundamentally a religious being, leads to holistic consciousness. The religious life is no other than the secular life, the whole of our life in the world, family life, business life, life as a citizen of the state, all of it lived virtuously. That is religious living. The whole of the secular life lived virtuously. When virtue comes to full fruition, there emanates from you a ceaseless influence for good, for healing, for well-being. Like the sun in a cloudless sky, you are the sun of enlightenment. Since you are unique, your influence will stimulate your brother's uniqueness to flower out in just that way which characterizes his uniqueness. Just be yourself and keep shining like the sun. The psycho-spiritual influence emanating from you naturally and spontaneously, assisted only when necessary by the appropriate word and act at the right time and place, will do the needful. Do not predetermine for him how you should change him or what he ought to do. Many a child's life, for instance, has been twisted, even ruined, by parental predetermination. You don't attempt to convert a rose into a dandelion or a butterfly into a giraffe, do you? So too, in relation to your neighbor, your brother man, when he is in need of help, do not rush in to give him help. Observe him patiently with metta and karuna and upekha. Understand him. And if and when he requests your help, refrain from being effusive or too generous with help. Give him enough to get along by himself. Assist him to see for himself how his problem arose, without imposing your understanding of the situation on him, or else you will offend his ego and hurt his vanity. If you are really skillful, he will not see at first how well you have helped him. Later on, he may see for himself what you have done for him, and he will be your staunch and grateful friend. Good will be the karma thereof, and true and faithful will have been your trusteeship of your brother.